Welcome to Stories, a thread within the Protein podcast that features the stories behind the people at the intersection of community, culture, and technology. We catch up with Nicola and Ida from Softa, a series of events that is forging new pathways for the future of the creative and tech industries. They're based in Copenhagen, but have recently completed their first Softa Digital Futures event in London, with many more events in the pipeline. Cover everything from feminist internet, building your own computer, and learning how to become a farmer. Enjoy. Ida, Nicole, great to have you on the podcast. Really excited to hear more about Softa, what you've been up to, especially with your recent incarnation in London. And why don't we start with just some quick introductions. Who you are and sort of what you've been up to.
Yes, thank you so much for having us.
No problem.
First of all, yeah, I'm Ida, and I'm like the half of Softa. We both founded Softa a few years ago, and we both work with other things alongside. I'm a digital artist and designer who's also working a little bit with sculpture now, venturing into the physical world as well. Yeah,
3D printing
with resin.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm Nicole. I am also a digital designer, graphic designer, a little bit of everything, jack of many trades. I also live at a farm with my girlfriend where I do like other events and hostings and lots of different things. Yeah.
Amazing. And you're Copenhagen, right?
Yes.
Cool. So where should we start? I'd love to sort of the concept, and we've been tracking this, and as we do sort of these, I don't like the word trends, you know, sort of more about kind of behavioral shifts. And I think specifically we talk a lot about slow tech and sort of more like the human side of technology. And would love just to get a bit of an understanding of where the original concept or the original idea for Softa, you know, first came about. Was it a moment when you'd be like, oh, we need to do that? Or was it just a bit more of a slow, gradual sort of idea that permeated? We'd just love to hear sort of the origin story.
Yeah, it was kind of a combination of both.
Yeah.
Because we both studied visual communication at the Danish Design School. And yeah, it was very difficult to get into these subjects. And to begin with, like, I didn't even know it was an option for me to learn 3D, for example. But then randomly we were introduced to it in school for like a few days. And I really wanted to keep learning, but it just felt so difficult. And I felt like the world was not for me. The whole aesthetic was not for me. And it was very technical and difficult, and the tutorials that you could find on YouTube didn't really relate to me at all. It was a lot of dudes talking very fast about making spaceships and fire and smoke and all that, and it just didn't feel right. But I really wanted to learn, but it was so difficult. And we actually studied together, but we didn't really speak.
yeah. At the same time, I was also not so happy about the science schools. I went to Finland to do an exchange year, and there they are like a little bit more in front with more tech education, also in the design education. And I started delving into the 3D space and creative coding and all of that, and just thought it was so interesting. But also, as Ida mentioned, felt a little bit alone in learning, and then everything is a little bit harder when you don't have anyone to ask for help or like people around you. So actually what happened was when we both graduated our education in Copenhagen, there was a point where I thought I was going to do a lot of 3D design. So I wanted to build a render computer. Someone told me, you need to build your own computer. That's the only thing that makes sense. And I was like, do you do that? I have no idea. Who should I ask? Like, how? I don't know anything about computers. And then a common friend of us was like, well, you should talk to Ida because she just built a computer. And I was like, what? She just did what? And we just started talking, and you were like, yeah, I built it, but with help from a friend, but you could also help me. And you found some people that could help me do it. And that kind of started that conversation. It's like, why is this so difficult to build a computer and even get into the more technical sides of the design world for us? And yeah, so the conversation started there.
Yeah, and it was pretty instantly. Like yeah. We very soon realized, okay, there's something to work with here. We both had the same experiences. We both felt very alone and we don't relate to the aesthetics. Let's try to do something. And it was so funny, we were brainstorming names for this. Like, what should this project be called? What should we name it? And we're like, soft or something. And we just kept brainstorming softer, softer tech, softer learning, softer. And one day we just, let's just call it softer.
Yeah. Yeah. Because this was really what we longed for, was like a space where we could help each other, but also we could help creating these learning spaces and community spaces where you could see people that had maybe a little bit the same aesthetic and the same values and the same approach to tech as us.
Yeah, so that's when we started a little studio where we made a co-working space and we gathered some more people and yeah, females, which was, there was not a lot. So in Copenhagen, I feel like we found the five that existed at the time and yeah, started working together. And we just realized how much easier it is to learn when you have people around you that are similar to you and that wants to learn the same things. And suddenly I spent, I think, 1 or 2 years learning the same amount of things that I learned in like 1 month with other people. And that was a big surprise. Mm. Yeah.
So how would you describe Softer then as an educational platform? Like what are the sort of, what are the ingredients that go into making?
Yeah.
It turned into many things over the years.
Yeah. I think it started more as a educational platform for ourselves and of course also a kind of community and network, and then it expanded into more of a community thing when we started doing more events and workshops, and we realized, okay, this is bigger than just us and our little thing in Copenhagen, and that was also where we could actually start delving into not just the educational part, but also the themes surrounding tech and everything that belongs to where are we going with tech in the world. And again, why is it that so many people feel like this field is not suited for them? And why is it that with tech, it's a very homogenous group of people that work within it? And we think it has a lot to do with how it's taught and the aesthetic about it, how it's talked about and the rhetoric and everything. So it became a little bit more of a platform for softening up the space, so it allows more people to dive into the space.
Yeah, and that's why it's very important today that software is both able to like zoom in and do very like hands-on stuff, teaching skills, talking about practices, how do you work, how are you a freelancer, how do you learn, but also zooming out and talking about the general picture of tech, where are we going, how do we want it to be in the future, who should decide. So now software is like working on both levels simultaneously, and that's a big part of it.
Love it. you covered so many good points there. Let's start. Okay, let's zoom out then. And okay. I love that origin story. You came together because you wanted to learn how to build a computer. That's bonding there. Yeah. But you mentioned it twice. Where are we going? And I appreciate that's quite an existential question, but maybe sort of chart a trajectory or like a hopeful destination where you would love us, I think being sort of the collective us, I guess the question here is with these seeds that you're sowing and this community that you're building, where is that hopeful future that you're sort of creating?
Yeah, you, me, you. It's a big question.
Yeah.
I think first of all, like the first step is to create spaces where more people, more diverse people, more females, more non-binary, are feeling motivated and invited to even participate, to even get into the world where it's possible to have influence. Because right now we know that a lot of people don't even feel like they have the voice. They don't even have the knowledge to even participate in the discussion, to even have an opinion, because, oh, it's so complicated. You need to be very smart and know a lot of things to even have a say in the discussion. So I'd say that is like the first step to go to a softer future, is to create these spaces where there's space for people. And
I think it is a little bit of a tricky question, because at the moment, to be brutally honest with you, I think both of us, we are in a little bit of a dark place regarding our digital futures. So I agree with what Ida is saying, is that I think our only hope is to get more people that can see the world in a different way, to be a part of shaping where we're going, because right now it's just running so fast and it feels so insecure in so many ways. And there's a lot of precarity around our digital futures. And right now it feels like it's all in the hands of the people that just want to go big and go fast and go for the big profits. And so we really hope that we can see more people actually gain some agency and some control in the tech sector to slow it down a bit and to redirect the directions.
And a lot of times we also, when we do these events that we do, it's also a way of dealing with this like feeling of hopelessness, that it feels like it's impossible to change anything, or it's impossible to have any influence. But when we put 100 people together who all has an opinion and a way of seeing the world in a maybe a better way, it just feels like there's still hope to change things.
Yeah.
Love that. Do you have a manifesto of sorts? Like, have you sort of documented that direction?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Sorry. It's quite a bit. When we, I guess, sort of talk about community, and we did a recent report on community, and there's a number of different ways of defining community. One of the ways that we like to think about community, and there's multiple, obviously, is around the idea of a collective adventure with a sense of belonging, shared ownership and vibes. I simplify, but that's how my brain works. But the idea of an adventure, that idea of a mission, that goal, that sort of manifesto, I know we found very helpful running and defining, Protein's community and other communities that we're sort of involved with or help out with. And I'm just thinking, you might already have, but I just know, because you're touching on so many important points in terms of communicating or galvanizing people, members, people who don't even know you exist yet, be like, oh shit, I'm here for that. it's a really effective format, sort of a manifesto, which is sort of defining that adventure, defining that destination in terms of where your hopeful future about where you want to end. So I don't know. More of an open question rather than a specific one around, articulating it, defining it, and able to share it.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And that, I think, for us, as we also said, like rhetoric and the way you talk about what we're doing is a big part of software. And we did write this kind of manifesto to begin with. Actually, that was the first thing we did when we thought about the project.
Yeah, before doing anything at all.
And for us, it was very much talking about leaning on the feminist values of slowness and care and empathy and connectedness. And it was very clear that a lot of people resonated with that, even though for us, it's kind of like almost goes without saying that this is values that goes into the work that we're doing with the collaborations that we're doing. But I think for a lot of people, of course, it's really nice to have it stated and to say that these are things that we value just as much as technical competences. This is like what we should put in front.
Yeah, and that's also what we try to make very clear in our events, is that learning technical skills or gaining new knowledge is equally important to sharing a nice meal, being in nature, hanging out, listening to a concert. Like, it's all a part of it. You cannot like be smart only. You have to also feel it. It's not only about knowledge, it's also about like feeling the belonging, feeling the importance, feeling the slowness, feeling the softness. Yeah, so we put a lot of care and empathy into the way we treat people at the events.
Yeah, no, I love it. Touching on some of these themes that the events cover, but obviously align with the values. For those that might not have heard of Softer or had the privilege of being to your events, maybe sort of touch on a couple of the key themes that you guys are tracking or certainly looking at the moment.
Yeah. At the last conference we had like a panel that focused on aesthetics and how aesthetics are part of shaping the future of technology by creating the images that we see and the images that we kind of predict the way we want things to look and feel in the future, and how aesthetics can be a part of changing the status quo, which was very exciting.
I think in this time and age where AI, of course, is it's going to be everywhere, aesthetics is even more important than ever, and to understand who feeds the world with aesthetics and what do they mean and how do we interpret and how do we feel about things when we see a certain thing.
Yeah, and also the way of like distinguishing aesthetics or even like describing them is going to be like the key thing to know, like the key skill to have in a future where maybe most of the visual things we'll see is going to be AI generated.
And fascinating, firstly. I mean, I'd love to dig into that a bit more then in terms of decoding aesthetics, right? If that's what what we're sort of touching on. What are we seeing then in terms of those markers or those signals in terms of the outcomes from the panel?
Yeah, good question. I think like from our own perspective, even creating the aesthetics around Softer, it's funny because it's not even that the aesthetics that we create is our aesthetic. It's more like the counter aesthetic to the main aesthetic. And we talked a lot about that, like, okay, we need to not even make what we want to make. We need to make the thing that is missing from the mainstream. At that point, now it's different. So, those artists in the panel, they all like use aesthetics in a different way to be political. And that was the very interesting part about it. So they all use aesthetic to kind of tell a story about how we should see the world differently, how we should change our perception.
I think also a good example is one of the artists, Bayan El Nayal. She's a Sudanese artist and she uses Blender, but combined with photographs that she took from Sudan. And her point is that she, in the work that she does, it's like it's not possible for her to find like these Sudanese references anywhere. Like she needs to document her own visual reference because it just simply does not exist because it has not been a part of the story. So when she works with like futurist subjects, you cannot find Sudanese futurist subjects because it's just not a part of our the way we aestheticize the future. So she needs to document that and make that a thing for herself. And that looks completely different than if you Google the future of architecture. It's like, you know, the Western future of architecture and how that's going
to
be.
Yeah. So it's also about like who gets to even shape these images.
Yeah.
Who gets to even make like the visual representation of how the future could look.
Yeah. Amazing. And I mean, that's the whole hour conversation right there.
Yeah.
But let's come back to it. Any other themes, topics that are deeply resonating?
Well,
Social media, we talked about it a lot. Community building, how we can be in charge of our own ways of being social online. And we did a workshop on that, shaping our own community guidelines for the future.
Yeah. But and I also think something I really loved from our last event was the, I'm always saying it, but the Emma Holten, which is a Danish, she's a feminist and political activist, and she's working with feminist economics. And now she started working with feminist tech history. So she puts like everything in context of where we are now and why it's such a male-dominated field and why we have the aesthetics that we have and why things are the way that they are. And for us, that makes a lot of sense to, as Ida said in the beginning, do the zoom ins and zoom outs. So we have the very practical and how does it look? How does it feel? How is it made? And then understanding the context of why are we in this situation right now? And why does it feel like that to be, for example, a female in the field of technology? So I think for us, this is always important to have like the bigger picture and the bigger context of ourselves, basically.
Yeah,
no, for sure. And I have three daughters, so this is a topic very close to my heart. And as part of their education, and seeing what's around them and what inspires them. And this is obviously the next generations coming through, but it starts right now, right? At school, at home, and what they're exposed to and what, you know, what opportunities that they, they're not limited by. Right, which I think is that is unfortunately and currently hopefully changing, but the default, it's a not limited rather than in terms of like an open possible. I'm a huge advocate and supporter of any of those futures, and agree fundamentally in terms of where and what should be done to challenge that. And yeah, you had a pretty good number of guests, if I do say so, that have been on the podcast as well, from Shanu to Kim to Lucy, as well as our beloved Kez. It's something that we've definitely been sort of tracking and supporting sort of as we go. But that aside, would love to, and I think I saw a message about like a year in review for Softa. And would love if you're happy to maybe just to share some of sort of the highlights of sort of Softa's year in review.
Yeah, so this is a thing we started doing last year. Is for our event, we invite speakers that were there the year before or worked with Softa in any way. And yeah, we do this year in review. So now we actually have to start talking about what our year review should be for the next event coming up. So it's a very good question. So we will think now.
So the idea was to like go through major tech events, but talk about them in a way where we get a little bit more nuance, a little bit more, you know, critical opinions about like the decisions that were made. For example, we had to talk about Elon Musk buying Twitter. And then you get some perspectives that you maybe don't get because we invite people who have that are very smart and know a lot of things, but also very funny and good at talking about it. So it gets into this like, and Rifke was doing the moderation, which made everything very funny and also informative.
Yeah. Yeah. It was also a format also to take a little bit like the shit on all the big like, breaking tech,
the new big thing that we all need to know about.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's also like a funny thing, a soft way to start the event.
Yeah, but I think this year we're probably going to talk about how the big fear of AI taking over all of our job and making us all like insignificant and unemployed. I think that's probably going to be a subject of this year.
Yeah,
I mean, that resonates, right? Shifting gears again, there was one event in Copenhagen, like one in London, what's next in terms of softer events and, you know, your immediate plans coming up?
Yeah, we're doing a conference in Denmark in September. So that's what we're working on now.
Yeah, and I think London is, for us, was very eye-opening, to say that in English even, that we think it works so well having Christy and Rachel organize an event, and we can see it happening in other places in Europe. We're already in contact with some people that want to organize softer events other places, and for us that would make a lot of sense that we spread out and we just have a lot of satellites as well.
To make also like the dream of having softer being a movement and not just a project. It's like a movement happening everywhere.
Yeah, love it. And okay, we now I pause because I applaud you hands down in terms of sort of tapping into a clear need in terms of providing that accessibility to those who might not be aware of it or be able to be able to access it. But a very practical, technical, actually personal question, because we're looking at it ourselves. And is there, I guess, what's my question here? It's around the role of technology, as we are, you know, there, that is a clear thread of the importance of technology. But for yourselves and for the softer community, how are you approaching, you know, the use of technology and building your own community? If that makes sense.
And it's a funny question in a way, because ironically, we're not very good at using these like communication technologies that you call social media. We have a Discord channel that we look at once every 3 months, and we made a Mastodon server that I have never opened. I don't even know how to get the app. so we utilize a lot of the community to do this kind of work for us because we are not very into it. Yeah.
No.
And we did one live stream, and that was a chaotic moment. But it was fun, and I think people enjoyed it, but it was also chaotic.
It was not fun for us.
So we soon realized we're much better at doing the physical events, and then we're so lucky to have a huge community of people who are very good at using the technologies to enhance communications and do fun things and keep in touch. And
yeah, and it's actually, it's quite interesting because also with our main communication channel is Instagram, and we are posting like there's no rhythm, there's no flow. It's just every time we have something to say, we post it. And sometimes there will be a year, six months where we haven't posted anything. And sometimes we will post two times a day. Like there's no real plan with that. And I think that goes against every rule of social media marketing ever made.
It's not made to go with the flow.
No, but somehow it works for us. Like, you know, people attend our events, we have engagement, like we, people still see the things that we're doing. So I think for us, it's also a little bit like a statement in itself that we don't want to say we should feed the algorithm with the post three times a week and we should keep it going, the engagement, because otherwise we are going to be
forgotten
and no one will come to any of our things and we're just like gone, because it's not like that. And I think that's in itself is a little like a tiny
a win.
Yeah, a tiny win and a tiny bit of a thing in itself to be against this idea of just the next content post should just push everything that you're doing.
Was this actually your question?
I have no idea.
It was exactly my question, so thank you. and I appreciate the honesty as well, we feel you. We had a Discord, we closed it, and we use social media really badly.
So much work.
I mean, it is, but for what? So I guess what the direction I was hoping that we arrived at, which we did, if I may, is around the importance of human interaction and IRL over URL. And that certainly from our point of view was our main takeaway learnings from the building the protein community, the most recent incarnation, because there has been a few over the years in Discord, because so many positives from that experience that Kez was a key part of and contributed to. But there's a lot of limitations and frustrations and inaccessibilities. And we went a layer further into Web3 and sort of tokenization and really digging into that sort of ownership piece of that equation that I mentioned earlier. But the fundamental issue was it was too much. And it was like, why are we doing this again? Like, it's always been about the people. It always is, and it always will be. And the fact, and the fact that we have our studios, which is by definition a place that people, you know, commune in every sense of the word. And it was like, well, this is it. Like, this is what we are about and what we should be building upon, rather than trying to recreate this in the digital space. So, I mean, that was sort of our version of that, but it's great to sort of hear that from your side, because it reassures that the technology is, you know, it's never about the technology, right? It's always about what it enables or what you can do with it. And I think that's where our balance is, has come off, because we're like, oh, it's we need to do this because it can do that. And it's like, well, no, do we actually need to do that? It's like, what do we need? Like, what do you need? Like, what do us as a humankind need, rather than, you know, looking for solutions that are problems that don't exist.
But it has been a dilemma for us early on, this thing about doing physical events or doing online events, because there's also, you also exclude some people by only doing physical events, because not everyone can travel, not anyone live in a place where they can access what we do. And a lot of people, a lot of messages we've been getting about, like, are you going to live stream this? Is there a way to participate online? And we're like, no, sorry, we can't do that. But it excludes some people, of course. But it also makes us be more present in what we do and create the experience for the people who are actually there.
Yeah. And I think I really resonate with what you're saying, that at some point you have to, like, look at what is it that you want to get out of it and where is it that you feel comfortable and motivated. And for us, it's been both with, like, of course, doing events online, but also with posting a lot and having the Discord. And we felt like, oh, no, we are not, like, doing, like, living our full potential with the, we could gain so much more following and we could be communicating more. But at some point we just had to be like, no, because that's not us, and we're the project is of course us, and it can only be what it is because of what we can do. And maybe at some point we will get someone on board that thinks that's great to do, and then we can expand again a little bit more into the online world. But yeah, I think this, what is it actually that makes sense for us right now,
and what is this that we can actually do well?
Maybe you should reply to those guys who are asking about the web, the live stream, with a suggestion of doing like a little softer meetups in the local cafe, right?
Just
you know, if you can't. I still remember those meetups from back in the day, that with contact, like people that I'm still in contact with, and this is years and years ago, and it's local and it's ad hoc and it's on a Tuesday morning, and it's like, you know, it is, it's six people, right? But it doesn't matter. It's like, you made the effort to come together and, you know, break bread and have a coffee and chat about how to build a computer. And it's like, let's go. So anyway,
Yeah, that's a very good point.
I'd love to chat again, just change gears slightly again. And Nicole, you mentioned that you live on a farm. I would love to hear, I'm going to draw some really kind of crude analogies now around farming and growing and planting seeds. but we'd love to hear, just Nicole Farmer story. how that is.
It is, we don't have like a farming, like agriculture. We have a dog, that's our animal at the farm. She's also a lot. But it's actually, it's a little bit of a longer story, but let me see if I can do it short. So no, I'm bad at doing things short. So my girlfriend, who you actually, I think you probably know her, she bought the farm 7 years ago, and we've been together now almost 5 years. And at that time, she just renovated a part of it to make it into a residency. And at that point, I was like, that's amazing. That aligns super well with what I want to do in life. So we've been running it as a residency and a space for events and dinners and festivals and basically getting together with people. So in that sense, it's much more of a like a cultural farm than like an agricultural farm.
Love it.
Yeah, but that also aligns super well with Softer. And our next event is actually going to be at the farm. So not in Copenhagen, but a little bit outside of Copenhagen in the nature. There is a beautiful big garden and a lot of trees and the fields around. And it resonates a lot with both of us. I think I'm actually not the nature girl of us. That's Ida. She's, yeah, you can tell about your relationship with nature, maybe.
Yeah, it's also funny because the way we got like really close friends a few years ago was that Nicole asked me to come and cook for an event here. She didn't know that, like, I heard you can cook. I heard you can build a computer. Yeah. I heard you can cook. Can you come and cook? And then for many years, we've been doing so many productions together. So this is also where we learned to run productions together and to collaborate. And we both really like to care for the space and the place. I really love to cook. I want to, like, every time we do a soft event, I'm like, Nicole, can I please just cook? But we always end up not doing it because I have to do other things. But yeah.
And it's also funny, like, so as Ida mentioned, she's also a digital artist, and then she's also a chef, and of course a lot of other things. And we had this incident at one point that a person that knew Ida as a chef at the farm, like cooking for them, saw her exhibiting her work somewhere in Copenhagen, and he was so confused. He was like, how are you both
the baker
and the artist?
You provide service and you're an artist. That's not possible.
Yeah.
Confused.
So confused.
But for us, it's very important to have all these many roles. We like to change things up and work with our hands and bodies and get things done and clean up. We're very good at cleaning up.
Yeah. It's an important part of hosting.
Yeah, it is.
I love it. So did either of you grow up in the countryside or around farmers or around nature?
I did. I grew up in the middle of nowhere in a little village with 50 people and a lot of fields and forests. And my dad is a PhD biologist, so all my childhood he's been studying biology. So what we didn't have in income, we had in nature and knowledge, which was great for me. I loved it a lot. And we traveled and saw beautiful places and I learned a lot of things. I wrote my own book about butterflies and, you know, had a great time. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was very much a suburbia girl. I never thought I was ever going to live in the countryside. I was like, I'm city girl. I I love the city. And yeah, then I met Carla, who is also very much a city girl by heart, but it just made so much sense for us to stay out here at the farm. And I'm trying to get more into into nature and just like doing gardening and learning about doing gardening, because I know seriously zero. Like the first year I had to help in the garden, I ended up like, I don't know,
destroying
a big, like super beautiful part of the garden because I thought it was weeds. And Carla was just like, what have you done? And I was so proud. I was like, look, I was so efficient.
Look, I removed all the flowers.
Yeah. And she was like, no, these are growing up. They're going to be the most beautiful flowers. Yeah. So I'm on a journey
to learn
a little bit more.
So is that one of the talks then at Softer, sort of like how to plant flowers?
I think that would
it should be
should definitely be, and I will join that because I am just I know nothing about nothing. Yeah, Ida has been doing like things in our garden, and I haven't even been doing things.
Yeah, I actually did it as like I did my master's thesis project of my final year at the design school, which was about digital nature, a very like cliche thing to do. But I got super bored with sitting in front of the computer, so I was just like, what can I do? And then I did a butterfly garden here at the farm as like a part of this questioning what is real nature, how do we protect nature, how, what kind of nature do we value, what is our role in protecting it, can we even do it, should we even do it, all these questions. And that was super nice to have like a big playground to plant things.
Yeah, the farm is very much a big playground.
Yeah. I love it. How are you defining digital nature?
Defining?
Digital nature.
Yeah, this is almost, I feel like digital nature is almost like a non-word at this point because it's been used in so many ways that I don't think anyone even know what we mean anymore. I think for me, I was very obsessed with using digital tools and 3D scans and render engines to kind of trying to recreate like natural places, sanctuaries, places that have been lost or things that I remember that doesn't exist anymore. But I also, I don't know. I think it's a very weird subject because I'm not sure if it's helping anything to work so much and look so much at nature through the lens of technology because it becomes sort of a alienation on a new level.
Yeah, but I think looking at your work, at least because Ida's work deals a lot with nature from the outside, it felt like it was also an entry point for you to reconnect a little bit like and find your childhood fascination with all the little insects and the different kind of plants and actually have a reason to explore what is happening in the real nature so you could take it back to the computer.
Yeah, I think in my work at least it's very much like a tool to remember with. It's a way to conserve a memory or think about dealing with something that is slowly decaying or rapidly decaying and remembering it in a way that is not how it looked, but maybe how it felt.
I'm sure you are aware of the Marshmallow Laser Feast work. There, obviously not. Then there's a group here called Marshmallow Laser Feast, and they create these incredible 3D worlds. And they did. I was just trying to look it up. I think it's called In Nature. Which is it's a 3D it's a helmet that you put on but whilst in a forest that enhances your current sort of surroundings. I'll send you a link afterwards. It's absolutely stunning. And to me, when I heard digital nature, that's immediately where I went to aesthetics again. I think it's a fascinating theme topic, and especially coming back to, you know, accessibility, that not everybody has access to nature. Not everybody has the privilege or the opportunity to go and walk in a field and enjoy all of those incredible things. So I agree that it's not an ideal solution, but maybe there is a way of, you know, using some of this technology to at least, you know, provide that escapism or provide some of that sense or provide some of that tranquility. Or, you know, to me, you know, and I live in the countryside as well. When we moved out a few years ago, it's calmness, I think, is the main thing. That you are like, this is what it is. Because it's just, I mean, it's quiet and it's dark and it's like, it's beautiful, but ultimately like the feeling is a sense of calm and tranquility on a very personal level. And I appreciate that's, we're very fortunate to be able to experience that. And again, as mentioned with my kids, it's sort of giving them the opportunity to experience that before they turn into teenagers and all they're going to want to do is go back to the city. So, so yeah, we'll see. Amazing. This has been like beautiful chatting to you guys. A couple of final questions, conscious of time. Firstly, what's the best way of someone getting in touch with you in terms of further conversations or continuing some of the themes that we discussed?
Yeah, sending an email. And then if we don't reply, send one more.
I love that.
Don't be afraid to be like annoying by
reminding.
I think this is, and this is also something that we are learning, that it's okay to send two emails or maybe sometimes three emails if people are not answering, because
people are busy, right? Yeah.
It's lives, and we also do other things. We're not, I think a lot of people think that we're only software, but we are a lot of things, and we do a lot of projects and work for a lot of different people and projects. Yeah.
Cool. And your email address?
hi@software.website.
Great.
Or Instagram DM.
Yeah, Instagram DM.
All right, wicked. And final question, and it doesn't need to be one, but, and you've already got a few already have been on the show, but who would you like to hear join the podcast in terms of people that you've been tracking or people are doing sort of really interesting things that you think more people should know about?
Maybe Liv Emma, because of her amazing voice and her beautiful work. That's what I think about first.
Yeah, she was a part of the Surf the London event.
Yeah. I think it's Olivia Ema or something. Mm. Yeah, I'm not sure how you pronounce the last name, but she does amazing work. She has a lot of things to say about it, and her voice is just the most soothing thing you can listen to. So maybe her.
All right, yeah. Amazing. Ida, Nicole, thank you so much. I wish you every success in more softers. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.